these violent delights and violent ends.
Welcome to Violent Delights, a Westworld podcast. We're your hosts, Andrew Sarcini,
Tosin Anafawakin,
and tonight we are joined by special guest Engadget senior editor Devendra Hardawar. We've just watched the first episode of Westworld's second season titled Journey into Night. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead, so let's dive into the after talk. But first, we've got some online spots you can get in contact with us. You can write to us or email us a voice memo at hbowestworldpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at hbowestworldpod or just hashtag Violent Delights. And our Facebook page is Westworld Podcast. Add us on iTunes, like us, and please leave us a review. That's how we get noticed for our show. Devendra, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well. It is a little late here on the East Coast, but I'm excited to talk about Westworld.
Yes, me too. I am stoked about this first episode. You have the advantage of having seen a few episodes in your role as Engadget senior editor, but we're going to limit our conversation spoiler-wise to just this one episode so that we don't jump ahead a little bit. Dwayne is out this week. He is actually having a baby as we speak. Well, not he is, but you know.
Yeah, he's creating a new life form with his wife. Amazing.
He doesn't need
totally organic. Yeah,
he doesn't even need like a host creation machine to do it. It's just sort of the old-fashioned way, the 2018 way, and not the 2153 or 2053.
It's crazy. Also, it is just crazy to be talking about this. Dwayne is one of my oldest friends, so I'm so happy that this is, you know, that they're experiencing this right now, and happy to help cover the show here for you guys too.
Yes, thank you a lot, and we can't wait till Dwayne actually gets to hear this and have his arguments that he'll tell us later on next episode.
Before we jump into the episode proper, Devendra, why don't you give us sort of your background with Westworld from season one? Like, how did you feel about what you've seen so far in season one?
I feel like I've had kind of a love-hate relationship with this show, so I don't want to be too negative. I don't want to yuck your yum here. I think it's, you know, it's a wonderfully produced show. It is a show I want to love so much. And I think season one was so wrapped up in the puzzleness, the puzzle blocksness of the narrative, that they forgot to tell a story. And, you know, there are a couple, they're standout characters. Like, I love Maeve, I love Dolores. But it just felt like what was going on, the show was really scattershot. It dragged at points when I feel like it should have had more momentum. And honestly, like, what you really need to see in season one is, like, the pilot and the final episode to really get what's happening. And in between that, I wanted more character development. I wanted to know who these people were and kind of what was happening in this world. So I was disappointed by all that. In many ways, it felt like HBO really wanted another Game of Thrones, something to take over that like prestige series thing. And I don't feel like it's quite there. But season two, at least based on this episode and the few I've seen, it's a lot stronger. So I'm feeling good because it is something I want to dig more.
Yeah, you know what? I definitely agree with you to a lot of the points. I do think there was a solid acting throughout the course of the season. You know, Anthony Hopkins was just amazing as
oh my God,
Dr. Ford.
And
you know, I'm going to definitely miss him, assuming he doesn't turn up much in the upcoming season. But yeah, I think it really started slowly, and a big portion of what drove the show was trying to figure out what this mystery was, not necessarily the motivations of the characters and where they were going. Now
it was a show with a literal treasure map, and I feel like that's a big cheat. This character just wants to figure out the maze, wants to get to the end of the maze, but why? Who is he? What is, you know? I don't even need to know what the maze is, but it did seem like it was a literal maze that the show was leading us towards, and not like, I don't know, anything more interesting. But yeah, go on.
If I'm being generous with the show creators, I would say that on a meta level, perhaps that they've engineered season one to feel like a maze, and with any luck, season two will feel like a door that is opened to us, and we will I don't know. Maybe I'm.
Have you guys ever gone through like a maze, like a corn maze or something?
Yeah,
it's fun for a while, and then you're just like, "I just get me out of here." I get it.
I will push back a little bit in, on what you said and say that I feel like I was really fulfilled by the character development in season one. So we'll see how much further we get in season two. Let's jump into our season two discussion. This is Journey into Night, which is written by Lisa Joy and Roberto Patino, directed by Richard J. Lewis, who had previously directed about 40 plus episodes of CSI and 12 episodes of Person of Interest for the Nolans, a solid utility director. I think they brought him on to because they knew he would get the job done.
That was a fun show, too. I don't know if you guys have talked about Person of Interest, but there is so much of that DNA in Westworld. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
I saw about the first half of a season, lost a little interest in it, but I probably should go back and rewatch it.
It's a good background viewing show, but so many, like, a great cast, and also sort of like, if you were to do Batman as a real-life vigilante with all the power of tech and everything, it feels more like
that. Batman the detective, the world's greatest detective.
Not surprising from the Nolans, but yeah.
All right. First of all, the one thing I want to sort of cover in depth a little bit here is the opening, the new title sequence. So we have a new title sequence, and there are some key. It essentially has the same sort of feel as the season one title sequence. There are some key differences. In place of a female horse and rider, we have the forming machine making a buffalo. In place of lovers having sex, we've got a mother and a child, and I feel like that's thematically going to play a huge role in the upcoming season. Mm-hmm. We've got this weird sort of injection of this black virus-like fluid into a petri dish. Everything on the whole is much darker than the season one main titles, which had a lot of sort of light and white and maybe hope. And I feel like this has an overall feeling of more darkness and despair. You get a sequence towards the end of the main titles where the buffalo crashes through the glass, is in emphasizing, I feel like, the chaos of the host world crashing into the external world. The buffalo falls through the floor. We see this image of a falling black hat. We see a flash of Mount Fuji. I think that that hints at a little bit of Shogun World coming up ahead. And the whole sequence ends with this imagery of the Vitruvian Man from season one, but rather than being in that sort of white forming fluid that we see, that glue-like fluid, it's in water. So I feel like that will tie into stuff in this upcoming season, perhaps involving the flood that we see at the end of this episode.
Well, I mean, I think you're exactly on point there, where it's just a whole lot darker. It's less about creation and less about putting together this world, and more about exploration of what it means to be these hosts, what it means to kind of be this mother and child, the pair, as well as, like, rather than being formed, this is feels more of like a development. But yeah, fairly interesting, and I think we'll understand it a bit more further we get through this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's I'm glad they kept the style of the first season opening and everything. It does feel like some of these clues are very specific and on point, like Mount Fuji, just based on what we know. Yes,
sure.
Shogun World, for sure. Some of the stuff, like the imagery is interesting. Like, what does the black virus fluid into the petri dish, like, is that more representing, I don't know, this artificial consciousness we're creating, or something else? Like the virus that basically transmits itself from Dolores and kind of, you know, brings free will to all these folks.
Yes, interesting questions. I think that they will, you know, we've seen from season one opening titles that a lot of that stuff is thematic, tied into the things that we've discovered through season one. So my guess is that we'll see more of that here in season two opening titles. So before we talk about the main body of the episode, as far as the salient points, let's just do a really brief summary of the episode proper. to catch people up. So we wake up we start the episode with Arnold, and we know it's Arnold and not Bernard because he's dressed like Arnold was in those flashbacks from season one. He's got the black eyeglass frames, and Arnold and Dolores are in this offsite examination room, the same room that we've seen them in season one. Arnold essentially says to Dolores that that dreams aren't real, and what's real is that which is irreplaceable. This is because he recalls a dream where he was in an ocean with waters rising around him. That plays into what we'll see at the end of this episode. Dolores is not satisfied with his answer, and Arnold says that he's frightened of what Dolores might become, what path she'll take. Again, I feel like that will play into what we'll see in this whole second season. Bernard, we wake up with Bernard having some flashbacks of what went on over the last couple of weeks, and he wakes up on a beach. The Delos security team finds him. They're led by Stubbs. The team is storming the beach, executing stray hosts, and the whole team is led by a man named Carl Strand, who's the head of Delos Ops. We see one of the members of Carl Strand's team, Costa. He extracts a brain from a ghost warrior to see what's inside what's inside that brain, to see what we saw before his death. We see Dolores has shot that ghost warrior, saying not all deserve to make it to the valley beyond. In another sequence, we see Dolores has these Delos execs prepared to hang, and she basically monologues to them by saying, "You're in my dream." And she asks basically what she feels like she should do with them. She says, on one hand, the rancher's daughter sees the beauty, Wyatt sees the disarray, but these are both roles that have been written for me. I need to play myself. We're not entirely sure what that myself is referring to. The guests say a plea for their lives. They say, "Can't you see we're sorry?" Dolores says, "It doesn't look like anything to me." I thought that was a nice little cut. A nice little twist. Later on in the episode, we get a scene with Dolores and Teddy. Teddy asks Dolores he mentions that they've been riding for a while and all they're seeing is dead bodies. And he asks if this is really what Dolores wants. Does she want like this swath of dead bodies in her wake? She tells Teddy she recognizes guests as creatures who look like us but are not like us. Teddy wants to run away with Dolores in this world, and Dolores mentions that this world isn't enough. There's a greater world outside, and she'll need to take that from them as well. Them referring to these, essentially to us, the guests. She says that she remembers everything. We're not entirely sure what that referring to, which remembers everything that has happened to her, we think, from season one and before. Her entire backstory, and she even mentions that she remembers what's going to happen and that her story ends with her and Teddy. At the end of Dolores and Teddy's journey in this episode, it ends with Angela, who is part of their rogue team that's going around killing Delos executives. Angela comes and says, "We found it." And Dolores says to Teddy, "I need you to see this, whatever this is." So we don't know what that is that they found, but we will get that in episode two, perhaps. We've got the aftermath of the party. We see the man in black, who we know is old William. He rises from the carnage of the slaughter of all the guests. So he's made it alive, we know. He goes to a cabin, which we think might be his cabin, because it's got all of his stuff there. He's ambushed by hosts and cornered, but he ends up killing the hosts. He patches his wounds, and he takes out a fresh black hat. So he's in the game again. Later on in the episode, he encounters who I've been calling Fordbot Jr., which is the young Ford robot. Older Ford speaks through Ford and says to him that he acknowledges that he's made it through this maze, and that maze was meant for the host, and now he's got to make it back out to find the door. And the maze was not meant for William, but the game, this game, Finding the Door, was meant for William, and that game will find you. Okay, later on in the episode, we're moving to the Delos Tech Center, where everyone is sort of refurbished, all the hosts are refurbished. Sizemore is cornered by a cannibal host, which ironically is parroting the words that he wrote for that cannibal host. We saw that in season one, that cannibal host is about to eat Sizemore using his own dialogue. Maeve comes in and freezes that cannibal host and rescues Sizemore. She's looking for her daughter. They go off to find where that daughter is located. Along the way, they pick up Hector. Charlotte Hale escapes with Bernard. This is immediately after the party. Escapes with Bernard to the secret lab that Bernard's never seen before, and they're doing some secret stuff that isn't part of the park operations. Hale, in fact, Hale brings him into this secret lab, she says to him, "This is not me reading you in. Don't make more of this than you think it is. This is just us sort of escaping away from the carnage of the hosts trying to kill everybody." Bernard encounters this drone host, which is an off-network utility host designed to carry out work. They don't consider occupants within this lab that have been cleared from their DNA has been filtered out. They don't consider them a threat. The drone hosts are collecting records of guest experiences and guest DNA from hosts. Within the context of this, meanwhile, Charlotte's trying to get a hold of the Delos headquarters off-site and send an extraction team to rescue Charlotte and Bernard. And they say that they won't send an extraction team because they're waiting for the package, which we know from season one is the intellectual property of the brains of the Delos hosts that she loaded into Peter Abernathy and sent out into the world. So moving on forward to that, Bernard, she asks for Bernard's help in that. Bernard uses what's called a mesh network to query neighboring hosts in order to find Peter Abernathy. As he's doing this, he begins to die because, as we know, Bernard is a host. He begins to die from a loss of cortical fluid, seeps out of his ears. So he secretly steals some from another host and injects it into himself before Charlotte can notice. Charlotte is still unaware that Bernard is a host. And this flashes forward to 2 weeks later, because all of this is occurring immediately after the slaughter at the gala where the hosts are, where Ford was slaughtered. But we flash forward to 2 weeks later where Bernard was found on the beach. Bernard and the security team have arrived at the party where the guests were slaughtered, and they find Ford. They find him dead. They come across a lake with a dead Bengal tiger. Stubbs notes that it wandered from Park 6. On previous episodes, we've talked about that Park 6 might be Raj World. Maybe Stubbs, or perhaps it is Carl Strand, head of Delos Ops, I can't remember, asks him to try and remember what happened to...
It was Strand.
Strand. Okay, mm-hmm. So they come across this area, this terraformed area, where the sea has been dug out on Delos that wasn't there before, and this had to have been Ford's doing, but Stubbs can't figure out how this happened without... anybody else in the park knowing that basically Ford did it incredibly secretly. In this lake are all of the hosts. They're all drowned in this lake. And Bernard seems to remember that he was responsible for this. He says, "I killed them, all of them." We, as viewers, we don't know exactly how or why. And that's the end of the episode. So as brief of a summary as I can give you,
for an episode that was hour 16 or something.
Yeah, like yeah, it was a supersized episode. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of supersized episodes in this season. All right, let's get into some of our salient points about this episode. This is our next section here, and we're going to start with the title. The title of the episode, Journey Into Night, that was the title of Ford's new narrative that he introduced at the end of season one. It's also a title of a play from Eugene O'Neill. That play examines the a family's sort of dysfunctional family and how the pain of that family is made worse by their depth of self-understanding and self-analysis. Mm-hmm.
That's a Long Day's Journey Into Night.
Long Day's Journey Into Night. That's correct.
Okay, yeah.
So perhaps this that will tie that ties in a little bit into the theme of this show, where you have Dolores and Bernard sort of examining themselves along with Maeve, and how that self-examination turns into darkness.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I'm sort of throwing spaghetti in the wall and seeing if it'll stick.
It's Westworld, Andy. This is how we do. The family squabble idea is interesting, though, because I like the buildup that we're seeing between, I don't know, different factions.
Mm-hmm.
Of these, I don't know if we're calling them robots or
hosts.
but there is the Maeve faction.
Yep.
Which is, she's trying to find her child, and she surprisingly seems to be building up to be the more empathetic one, the sympathetic one.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like I feel like we're getting some biblical imagery there at some points, whereas Dolores has gotten more ruthless, I think, because she is more righteous in her belief. There's definitely religious connotations in terms of how they're both interpreting this new discovery of free will. But it is interesting to see Dolores, does not mind killing other hosts. Like, not everybody is on her side.
Right. She says to the ghost warrior host that she kills, she says that not everybody not everybody deserves to make it to the valley beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Which part of that brings up, there's a point that Tosin, a note that you had made about her being like a Moses-like character who is perhaps leading that her flock through the valley of darkness.
Yeah.
And so perhaps this ghost warrior is not part of that flock that she's leading through. And I'm wondering if that whole sort of imagery of her being this Moses-like character ties into the what we see at the end of this episode with the hosts being drowned, if that strikes a parallel to the Red Sea flood. And it makes me question what role does that make Bernard, if Bernard says that he was the one that caused all this, that he killed them. You know, his quote was that I killed them, all of them. He feels like he's responsible for the hosts being flooded in this water. So if Dolores is a Moses-like shepherd, then what does that make Bernard?
Yeah, does it make Bernard more of sort of like a godlike character, since he plays this duality role where he is a host but also kind of seen as a
the son of God?
Wait a second there. And he oversees everything. But going back to Dolores, I think it's just very interesting to notice her development throughout that scene, where, as you noted, she is trying to shepherd them through sort of the valley. This reminded me of Pulp Fiction and Samuel L. Jackson's character Jules, where he's quoting Ezekiel 25:17, where, you know, it ends with shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness. And you notice throughout the course of the film that his character changes and develops what that text means to him, mm-hmm. and sort of his role. And I think we're seeing similar signs of development here with Dolores, where, you know, she first started off as the rancher's daughter, right?
Sure.
Where she noted purely the beauty of the world. She added the character of Wyatt, where she's causing disarray, and she notices, you know, she quotes violent delights having violent ends. But these are all sort of roles that she's forced to play in the play, right?
Right.
And now that she's evolved and really trying to discover who she is and trying to meld and trying to, you know, accentuate what that is and bring that to screen. So I think that's pretty poignant. Mm-hmm. And as you kind of mentioned, Devendra, she is very sort of anti-guests, anti the normal humans, yeah. Right?
She's very righteous.
Right.
So there's like a fundamentalism to her beliefs right now. And I'm always honestly interested in like how people come to those sort of beliefs. So that's a really interesting twist. And honestly, the change to Dolores, right? We started this show with her as like the innocent farmer's daughter, sure. Like you said.
A victim.
Yeah, kind of a victim, kind of like the typical damsel in distress mm-hmm. role you'd expect. And I think the best thing Westworld has done is transform that character into somebody who is really taking, you know, she has free will and she's discovered this thing and she's trying to get more from the world. And yeah. She's also trying to exact vengeance against the people who have kept her trapped for so long. So seeing her in season two now, like that, I'm just glad. I'm glad they're doubling down on this whole storyline.
Terrible vengeance, right?
Terrible. or furious anger, yeah.
But going back to, Devendra, going back to what you said about the sort of the different factions, on the other side we have Maeve, who is she herself, and we've discussed this in, I think the last time we discussed this was our wrap-up of season one, how Maeve has come to this sort of self-awareness herself, where mm-hmm. she realizes that she is in this loop. Even on a meta level, her narrative has been written for her by Dr. Ford, and the first time that we see her break that narrative is when she abandons the idea of going to the mainland and goes to look for her daughter instead. So you see that part of her creating her own narrative, and I guess my question is, we sort of know what Dolores is goal is, to sort of shepherd these hosts to a better world. But what is Maeve going to do once she finds her daughter? Like, how is that going to inform the rest of her narrative? What will she do after that? I'm not asking you to specifically answer anything that you might know from mm-hmm. other episodes, but I guess that's just a basic question that I'm left with at the end of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, like, I don't know much more than you do at this point. Mm-hmm. I hope it's something more interesting, right? This quest for her daughter means something.
Sure.
For her, and knowing the show and the creators, like, it's not going to be simple. Like, I'm sure she'll find the girl and she won't be what she expected. But she's learning more about herself along the way. And I think that's interesting, right? We were introduced to Maeve as sort of this like cunning, you know, prostitute character mm-hmm. who, you know, is kind of violent and will do what she has to take care of herself. And there's a weird, I don't know if it's a softening, but she is much more sympathetic to the other hosts now. Like she sees the inhumanity of what's happened to them. I think the daughter is just like the main driving force for her to like
right.
kind of, yeah, find some humanity in this madness.
And to be honest, she's also a bit more softening towards the guests and
right.
sort of the humans, right? She had several opportunities to kill Sizemore, and of course, you know, I think he's positioning himself and as someone who can still be of assistance, but. To be honest,
yeah.
you know,
the Gaius Baltar of this show.
Yeah,
very much.
Right. Exactly. You know what I also think is pretty interesting about Maeve is that she, you know, Sizemore kind of tries to have her question on what she sees as reality, on like, hey, this, you know, your child is just another storyline.
Right.
It's not really a real thing. But she pushes back on that. She pushes back on like what reality means, and you know what her dreams and thoughts and her body are, and that she is actually a real thing, and she wants to continue pursuing what her goals and desires are.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe there's a hope that even if her child isn't what she expects, like maybe she will remember some of this prior programming or this past life, like we call. You know, past lives is a thing a lot of humans believe in. It's just kind of like, I don't know, a fantastical thing. But mm-hmm. that's a good way to describe this past programming, because these are experiences they've had. And the humans see nothing, like see no value to that. They see only the value of like their latest software, their latest upgrades. And I think it's interesting to see what these, you know, what the hosts actually think. Like, we're getting glimpses of the world outside of Westworld too in the season. Season one kind of hints at that too. And I think that's all very interesting. So I like the way they're doing those flashbacks as well.
I want to go back to in that scene where Dolores has the guests from the party. She's got them ready to be hanged, and she mentions to them about that their cornerstone is survival. And I think that ties into where in season one, where we learned that the hosts are given these cornerstones of tragedy, something tragic in their backstory to sort of anchor them to reality. And and Dolores mentions that survival is our, as human beings, as guests, our cornerstone. But it's not the only drive that we have. There's part of us that wants to hurt and kill. I just wanted to sort of mention that because that's, it sounds interesting. It's interesting that the cornerstone that we've given the hosts is different than the cornerstone that the hosts perceive that we have.
Yeah. And actually pretty interestingly enough is, you know, Dolores mentions how they've been made prisoners to these desires that, that the guests have, and now they're prisoners to her desires. But I don't know that we're quite clear on what her desires are. We know that there's some sort of reckoning, and that, you know, I think we made this comparison to Spartacus in season one, where she wants to like overthrow everything. And as we hear in the scene with Teddy, she wants to take over not just Westworld, but the entire world. But we don't really know to what extent. We know there's that emotional connection between Dolores and Teddy, and there's that sort of quote-unquote love, if that does exist and still exists. I mean, we saw this with Dolores and William for a while, so hard to say. But, yeah, it's for me, it's still unclear on, like, to what extent. Teddy kind of questions that on his own, too.
Oh, yeah. And Teddy, it's really interesting because, you know, they cast James Marsden.
Yeah.
And this Teddy, like, they would do more with him.
Yeah.
And this season seems like they're kind of implying that. Like, there is going to be some disconnect growing between him and Dolores, because right now he's basically just being used as a tool and not really thinking for himself, even though he'll have the capacity to do that. So, yeah, there's a lot more we'll see there for sure.
And he absolutely, I feel like he absolutely does have a little bit of compassion for the victims of Dolores's rage, because he does push back on her a little bit. He says, we've traveled, you know, hundreds of miles, and all we've seen is bodies. Is this really what you want? He's questioning her motives and wondering if this is the ends to her means. So I feel like that's going to come into play as well. I wanted to sort of cherry pick a few interesting things that we've discovered about this episode, from this episode, that we didn't know before. One of the things is in the beginning scenes, we see when the Delos security team finds Bernard on the beach, Carl Strand, the head of Delos Ops, is talking with a soldier who's speaking in Chinese. And they're arguing about territorial access to the island. So first and foremost, we've discovered that Westworld and the other parks that share the same geographical location are apparently on this island, apparently in Chinese territory. You know, and I can't, obviously.
So that could be anywhere in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Honestly, because like China, and this could just be a future where China's like, oh, yeah, we have everything now. But even today, like, a lot of China has, like, I don't know, a lot of claimed areas there.
We've discovered for the first time ever, we've seen sort of the brain inside the hosts when these get extracted from the Ghost Warrior at the beginning, which is something that we've never really known about, the sort of the logistics of what make the hosts think. And now we're seeing it for the first time. It's the first time that we've seen these analysis tablets with these outboard sort of decks that hold these brains on them. So that was an interesting addition to that. Another thing is the whole sort of secret center that that who is it? It's Hale, Charlotte Hale brings Bernard to this secret center where something is going on. We're not sure, but it's definitely off the grid. It's not within the normal park operations. I'm not entirely sure what they're doing there. That's a big picture sort of question. What the secret plan is? From what I'm implying from what's going on there, it's what they're doing is collecting guests' memories and DNA, guest DNA from the hosts.
Cube examples.
Yeah. Kind of gross. You see these drone hosts like swabbing the pubic areas of these other hosts to collect the DNA. We're not sure what's going on there, but they're collecting guest memories and the DNA from those hosts, which is my presumption, my theory is that they are using those memories from the guests and the DNA in order to create duplicate guests as hosts in order to take over those guests' lives, which is exactly the plot of the sequel to the 1973 Westworld, Future World, which was a 1976 movie.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't think of that, but I was thinking like just in a more direct way, like, man, what a perfect way to blackmail everybody. Like that is... It's P-tape. It's the P-tape
for
all the rich and powerful people in the world. So yeah, they could certainly clone them and they have the capacity to do it. But even at a basic level, right, it's we have all the dirt on you, you know? Yeah. So now you have to, hey, you're a new Westworld investor, not by choice.
Right.
Give us all your money. Right. Yeah.
That's actually really interesting that you mentioned that, especially in this day and age with, terms of services and what it means with your sort of privacy and your data, right? Westworld is... this whole realm where you could be whoever you wanted and it didn't matter when you left the world. Well, similar to a lot of the other sort of breaches that we've seen where your data is not necessarily kept as secure as you thought it would be. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is like the ultimate outcome of Facebook data breaches, basically.
Yeah.
On an extra-textual level, if you go to the Delos Destination site online and you look at their terms of service, one of their things that you agree to is basically all of your DNA becomes their property to do with whatever they want. So that might lead into this bigger picture.
It's funny. Do they have terms of service for the fake terms of service? Like, no, we're just kidding. We can't do that. But, you know, for the show, right.
Right.
But either way, in whatever context we're talking about, either blackmail or creating hosts that look like their guests, the goal in both of these is the same, in order to use that leverage to Delos's advantage, basically. Uh-huh. To Delos's corporate advantage. Also, the whole concept of this drone host, who is not threatened by, basically they have this sort of, this one goal that they have to do, that they've got their job that they've got to perform within this center. And if you pass their sort of DNA sniffer, they'll let you be, they'll just sort of blindly go do what they're tasked to do. That whole concept also comes from the 1976 Future World movie as well. So I thought that was an interesting sort of, external nod to the sequel to Westworld there.
Yeah. One thing that I actually found pretty interesting was just the start of this episode where, a little bit in, you find Bernard kind of washed up ashore, and this gave me nods to another film by another Nolan, Inception, where you see, the character at the shore, and in this case, Bernard's glasses get kind of washed away, and to me, that shows just how throughout this course of the episode, his perception of reality and his perception of sort of the differences between hosts and guests really become blurred here, where you see a lot of the atrocities that are caused by both the guests and both the hosts, right? Mm-hmm. We have fairly early on a host trying to shoot, you know, whiskey or some sort of alcohol off the top of a head of a guest. That right. was the exact same thing that had happened at the going away party, right? The same thing had happened, but the roles were reversed. And you even hear that from Carl Schrad, that kind of chuckled at a question where Bernard say, hey, some of them aren't hostile. And he says, of course they are. You built them to behave like us. So I think there's this pull and push that he's struggling with throughout the course of the episode.
I mean, I think if we're talking about factions too, I think Bernard is in a faction of his own, where we see him, he will encounter a lot of conflict of self within the course of this season, as well as we've seen in the first episode here. And I think that his motivations will be in conflict as well, as we see where his allegiances lie, whether they are, you know, where we saw him sympathize with the stable boy when the Delos executives were harassing him and eventually killing him. But you also see that he still does have sort of that sense that he is not a host either. He knows he's a host, but he also feels like he's sort of more than a host as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where Bernard feels that he lies within that spectrum.
Yeah, he's constantly forced to help the guests in the conversations that you have, and you can tell by the tremors that he has that, you know, there's a disruption in his functionality in terms of as a host, but mm-hmm. just also yeah. as an individual.
And his brain leaking. That's not yeah. good.
Right. Right. It was a nice like stealth fix though for that brain leaking by getting the cortical fluid from another host and injecting it in. Mm-hmm. So
I've got a question for you, yeah. Devendra. Oh. Given your thoughts on sort of season one and on the mystery, we still have William / the Man in Black, right? And throughout this course of this episode, he removes his formal gear, gets back his hat, and finally finds a game that's really meant mm-hmm. for him. And so now he's really continuing that exploration. Now, how what are your thoughts on that? Does that thread line even work for you? Or
yeah, I mean, he is right now, he's a much more interesting character than he was in season one, right? I mean, we all love Ed Harris. Like, I thought he was great in that role. But what that character is basically God mode, you know,
right.
for Westworld. Like, he knew all the tricks. Nobody could touch him. He's seen all this before. Like, he is like the best speedrunner in the world, mm-hmm. right? He's been playing it most of his life. And now there's this guy who's still kind of, you know, still a badass, still a good shooter. But now he has no, like, he doesn't know. He's on uncertain ground. And I find that to be really interesting. So definitely glad they're going that route here.
But and speaking of the Man in Black, of old William, you know, my question is, what is his end game as mm-hmm. well? We saw that scene where he encounters who I've called throughout this show Fordbot Jr., the young Ford robot, and Ford speaking through him tells him that he's made it through the maze, and now he's got to make it back out to find the door, that the maze was not meant for him, but this game, the finding the door, is meant for him, and that game will find you. I guess my question is, what is that game? And which is the subtitle for this entire season of Westworld, The Door. What is that mm-hmm. game, and how will that game, how will the door inform William's goals, personal goals, goals right. for, you know, like, what is it that he is looking to accomplish by having these hosts think for themselves?
Right. The door, of course. Of course it's the door, by the way. Like, another Game of Thrones nod. Like, guys, just get over it. It's all right. You know, but I think the ultimate thing here is now it is kind of a mystery. And by the end of season one, we've seen, like, how much William was transformed
right.
by Westworld. And even in the flashback, too, we kind of get glimpses of young William becoming a, you know, the more ambitious guy.
Yeah.
And you know, that is fascinating. So to me, it's sort of like the lead character in The Fountain or something, right? Like, he is looking for the ultimate source of meaning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that could be anything, but his, you know, his devotion to Westworld made him one of the most powerful men in the world, one of the richest men in the world, like, has made him a titan of business. So what's next for this guy who's done everything in the world? You know, it's sort of like, he is Steve Jobs, and he's bored. So what's next? And I think that would be a really good way to kind of direct that whole mission.
Yeah, he already has the high score, right?
Right.
His name's already the top on the board, and what's next to accomplish? And to be honest, I sort of get this feeling that ultimately he could be he might not actually find that satisfaction that he's really hoping for.
Or it'll be, yeah, maybe not quite what he's expecting, like you're saying, right? Because I'm thinking of, like, the end of Inception, you know, like, what is the ultimate goal of that movie? Is just getting back to your family.
Right.
That's something that character always right. wanted, but I wonder if there's a similar emotional catharsis we could have for the Man in Black.
Yeah, I mean, he, to me, feels like the most unfulfilled, the character capable of being the most unfulfilled at the end of this journey. Because, I mean, if he's gone 30 years without being fulfilled, I doubt that he mentioned in this episode that there's always the yearning for more. So I feel like that yearning for more is going to continue even after he finds what he thinks is the end of this journey. A couple other things I wanted to bring up. At the very end of the episode, Bernard and the security team, they come across a lake with a dead Bengal tiger. And Stubbs mentioned that it wandered from Park 6. We've seen hints online from people who have, like, who've dug deep into the online Westworld sites and discovered mentions of something called Raj World, which is a world celebrating the Indian colonialism.
Yeah, let's celebrate Indian colonialism, by the way. Let's just do that. Of course.
Hey, I have no idea why or how Delos picks their worlds.
I feel like it would be very fitting, right? Because the Western, what is Westworld, right? It's an idealization of the American West, which right. was a brutal time
yes.
to live.
Yes.
But you idealize the cowboys and you romanticize living in big open spaces and fighting Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares what they want? Never mind that they were there first, right?
Right.
So, like, yeah, go diving into Indian colonialism, I think, would be...
And again, you have this...
Just as fitting, yeah.
Exactly. You have this sort of this European culture that is imposing their will on these indigenous people. So it's this, sort of the same, thematically, the same idea.
For sure. Tom Cruise better be in Shogun. I would not be... I won't be happy until that happens.
He is the last samurai in Shogun world. Other things, there's something else that I wanted to bring up and I'm trying to, yes. I thought it was a huge, point where Maeve forces Sizemore to strip down, not just to his skivvies, but completely mm-hmm. down, completely yep. naked. She
like
wants
all the hosts.
Exactly. Happen, yeah. Exactly. Yep. I mean, it's very clear that I don't think she's doing this necessarily as revenge as much as she wants him to understand what it was like for them all this time, so that he gets some sort of empathy for what she has had to go through.
Yeah, she's making him understand what it's like to be equal, and even forcing him to play the game now, right? So mm-hmm. she has that one line where she talks about, hey, you've spent enough time on the other side, and now it's time for you to suit up and play.
All right, let's move into another section, unanswered questions. I've just got a few unanswered questions here that relate to this particular episode. And Devendra, I'm sure that you, this might be a little difficult section for you to chime in on since you've seen the next couple of two or three episodes. So my question...
Yeah, I'll probably stay quiet.
Yeah. But Tosin, you can sort of theorize what happened to Charlotte Hale in the 2 weeks since she escaped with Bernard, and by the time that Bernard was found on the beach, like, what has been going on with her? What is Dolores taking Teddy to see when she says, I need you to see this thing, at the end of the episode? What does we've seen this white wolf sort of running through Dolores's memories in season one, and we see a physical manifestation of this white lone wolf in that Man in Black sees in this episode. What does that white wolf represent thematically, I feel like? And then once again, as long as we're talking about missing persons, where was Stubbs over the course of the 2 weeks? Because the last time we saw Stubbs, he
essentially got Jurassic Parked, right?
Yeah. He got taken over by the Ghost Warriors. And now, you know, we cut to 2 weeks later and we see him on the beach with the Delos security team. So what happened to him?
Yeah. No worse for wear. What if he's a host too? No.
Any guesses, Tosin? I'm not going to ask you, Devendra, to guess because you probably know.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I as far as like Dolores seeing Teddy or Dolores taking Teddy somewhere, to me, it feels like she's trying to also awaken him and then kind of show what's happening with those. But
she's going to deliver an epiphany for him the same way that Maeve did with Hector Maeve said in season one that she could have forced Hector to see things her way, but she wanted to show him in order for him to come to his own awakening.
Yeah. Otherwise, I kind of hope that we do get solid answers to these other questions, and it's not just throwaway material.
Yeah.
Because I like, you know, I think one of the most important things also from Inception is the construction of that maze. And I want this to be a well-constructed maze to a well-constructed story as well.
A well-constructed door for this season.
Yeah. It's got to be made out of mahogany.
All right, I think we've answered most of our big picture questions through our previous conversation here. Let's move on to some technical aspects of some of the stuff in the show. The music. So every week that on most seasons of episode one, we make some sort of comment on the music. What is playing on the player piano? Because it's usually some westernized version of some modern tune. But this is interesting. This week they had The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, which is a little closer to period authentic than the previous music choices. I thought it was hilarious that they chose The Entertainer, which is this sort of upbeat song, and it's titled The Entertainer. And it counterpoints.
Are you not entertained?
Exactly. it counterpoints with this montage of this carnage as Dolores and their gang are like gunning down the rest of the hosts.
Yeah, and further displaying that sort of dreamlike dynamic that we see throughout the course of this episode, as folks question what is their reality, what their desires are, and as we find out that we are no longer living in the world that's owned by the guests, but living and playing in the world owned by the hosts.
Devendra, any other thoughts about some of the technical aspects, the acting, special effects, directing?
I know there's some upcoming episodes directed by Vincenzo Natali, who did some in season one, too. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm glad to see him back here.
He did Cube and some great talk
Splice?
About
Splice.
Splice,
yeah,
love that
right,
movie.
That's right.
Talk about puzzle box movies. Vincenzo Natali is like the master.
That's how you do a puzzle box, okay?
Yeah. Anyway. Absolutely.
Like technically, I think the show, it's incredibly polished. Like that's the thing about Westworld. Like I loved everything. Like I loved the cast. I kind of loved the setting. I even loved like the renditions of, you know, modern songs
in old time
piano. Like I was on board with all of that. And season one just kind
love
of let me down narratively. Yeah, love the Radiohead. Like give me more of that. Now I think we're on a journey that seems more real here, right? Like we saw the flashback scene. Did you guys see a flashback scene with Dolores?
That's a good question. You're referring to the screener that you had, right?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm not, so maybe mark this for editing or whatever, but I want to make sure I'm not jumping. Did you see a scene of Dolores in the modern world at all?
Only in the upcoming episodes.
Only in the upcoming. Okay, yeah. So you know that's coming.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I think we didn't really get much of that in this episode. What is exciting to me about Westworld coming, moving forward, is that we get to see this world that kind of spawned this amusement park. Like, what the heck is happening out there? And, at some point it sounded like it was facing severe issues and the rich people are just kind of escaping off to this thing to kind of ignore the problems of the world. So I like that. That's what I want to see. I want to feel grounded in the reality of this world. So getting outside of the parks, I think, is much more interesting to me too.
We need a sense of context, right? Like, how did we get to this point? I feel
it's funny you mentioned that because I recently watched Ready Player One, and I felt
same
like,
problem. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I felt like I had no concept of the core world. Now I read the book, and like it was fairly rich, but I just never really got to understand like where the characters were coming from.
Yeah,
and
I wrote about that, by the way, for Engadget. So that was specifically my take on Ready Player One, is that there is no concept of the real world. So if you do that, then the virtual worlds are just kind of meaningless, even more meaningless, honestly.
Right. All right, let's, as long as you mentioned that, Devendra, let's talk a little bit about the next episode, the In the Weeks Ahead preview that they had. So breaking that down, we saw Dolores in a future setting, and she says, "Do you even know what you're really guarding here, the real purpose of this place?" We see Logan at a contemporary party amongst what appears to be frozen hosts. Everyone appears to be frozen. I'm not really entirely sure what's going on there. Devendra says. we see the man in black at night in what might be Pariah, or it might also be that little western town that Elazo comes from. We see a scene of James Delos, the Delos CEO and founder, and young William in Westworld amongst what appears to be frozen hosts. We see young William confronting Dolores in analysis in a tech center, which is the first time we've ever seen young William in the tech center. So that should be interesting. And over that, we hear Bernard saying in voiceover, "This world is just a speck of dust sitting on a much, much bigger world." And the whole montage sort of ends with Maeve wielding a sword in what appears to be Shogun World. So that's their next episode preview. I'm really excited about to see where all of that goes. And we will have that that preview in the show notes when you see this episode released. Okay, let's move on to our last section here, which is a ephemera, our reading list, where we give you sort of a little bit of extra textual stuff to take a look at to help you enhance your enjoyment of this episode. First and foremost, I wanted to point out a article in Playboy by author Adam Howard. Adam Howard interviewed me, and we talked for a great a while about what I'm expecting to see in the next season in this upcoming season of Westworld, and sort of how that thematically ties into what's going on politically in our world with the Me Too movement and the female empowerment. And you can read that article. We'll have the links in the show notes, and you can read that article online. There is a Medium article by an author named Michael Jordan called Artificial Intelligence, The Revolution Hasn't Happened Yet. And that sort of examines, you know, we've talked about how at the core of this story is the idea of rogue AI. And Michael Jordan, I think, sort of tamps down some of those fears about why that might not be coming anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And I put a link in there to a Reddit thread about what we've learned in this episode. It's essentially a spoiler-filled sort of breakdown of the new stuff that we've learned in this episode. And Tosin, you wanted to mention a movie, right?
Yeah, so we chatted about this throughout the course of this episode, but once again, Inception, for those who haven't seen that yet, it's a 2010 film by Christopher Nolan, so keeping it in the family, mm-hmm. so to speak. It covers dreams within dreams, and it's a sort of a science fiction heist film is how I'll describe it. So definitely recommend checking that out.
Nice.
Anything you'd like to add to our reading list, Devendra?
Sure. I guess whenever I talk about AI and this sort of thing, I want everybody to read Nick Bostrom's book, Superintelligent: Paths, Dangers, and Strategies. Oh. And I believe he's a professor, but he's been, you know, exploring AI and kind of talking about it and what it means for a very long time. And I think this is one of the best, mm-hmm. most recent books to kind of explore the potential for AI and what happens if it becomes as super intelligent as some people are predicting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a lot of conflicting theories. I would suggest reading newer stuff just because there's stuff dating back from, like, you know, the computer scientists have been thinking about this for a while. Philosophers have been thinking about this for a while. This is a great recent entry into that problem. But there's a lot of material out there, too. Like, once you start here, you'll find a lot of other things to kind of jump to.
Awesome. I think that is going to wrap up our episode this week, with the exception of asking you. I'm going to start with you, Devendra. You're our guest here. Where can people find your work on the internet when you're not helping us out?
I am at Devendra on Twitter, and you can just ping me there. I write about techandgadget.com, and I also do the /filmcast podcast at /film.com.
Tosin, where can people find your work online when you're not here on Violent Delights?
Well, you can find me at twitter.com/toast4321 and other ramblings and discussions of indie games at geeksofdoom.com. What about yourself, Andy?
You can find me online at mrbabyman.com, or just do a Google search for Mr. Babyman, which is my social media handle, or Andrew Sorsini, and you'll find everything that I am looking at online there. Along with Tosin, we also do a tech podcast, along with Dwayne as well. With Dwayne and Tosin and I do a tech podcast. Devendra, you used to be a co-host on that tech podcast. It's called The mm-hmm. Drill Down, and it is also on the Geeks of Doom podcast network, and you can find it at geeksofdoom.com or also on iTunes. It's a fantastic little tech podcast we do weekly. As for the rest of us here on this show, you can join us next week when we cover episode 2 of Westworld Season 2, and that episode is entitled Reunion. And that is going to do it for us here on Violent Delights, and we'll see you guys next week.